Shayna.
Christopher.
I'm so happy to see you again.
We're back.
We're back. I have about a million things I want to say to you since we haven't talked in such a long time, but here's one. Here's one thing.
Okay, just one thing. While it's just the two of us here alone, privately, in the space of the Wilton studio. Okay. Go for it, Christopher.
Among other new things.
Yes.
I have repopulated the spinny wheel with some new categories.
Oh my God. Have you really?
I have. We'll get into that in a minute.
We certainly will. I've been sitting here in front of it for 10 minutes now and didn't even take a close look at it. So that's exciting, Christopher.
Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen. We're the podcast trying to reclaim the public narrative. The public narrative that is out there today that is often so heavily dominated by conversations about politics and economics, which do not move us nary one inch closer to the domain of human flourishing.
Indeed, our project, the S1 Project, of which What in God's Name is the podcast, our purpose is to reframe, to use different lenses to see more deeply into our shared common life. And boy, we need to do that. we need that deeply.
We need to change the tone of the conversation. Chris, I'd love at some point for us to talk a little bit more about the S1 Project. Many of our listeners recognize the podcast, and the podcast was and is and shall be for the foreseeable future. But one of the things that happened out of the podcast was the realization that, you know, trying to change the conversation if only Chris and I are doing the talking is probably like taking a very slow boat to China. So we've been looking for other outlets, and you'll hear more about those over the season as more and more opportunities for your participation become available.
Yeah. And another piece of the S1 Project is connecting with places where these kinds of conversations are already happening. Not exactly in the same way that you and I do it, Shayna, but I think there's a common intuition that these kinds of moral, philosophical, and theological conversations need to happen. So they're happening different places, and part of our project is to connect with those who are already doing it.
And for our listeners who haven't heard yet, why S1 Project? Well, S is the letter you put on words to make them plural. One is a singular number, and if you've listened to the show for any period of time, you know Chris and I aren't big fans of the binary, so we included both, S and 1, the S1 Project.
Shall we spin the wheel?
Let us spin the wheel. God only knows whose turn it is.
So here's the deal, Shayna. I left the old categories on there, in fairness to you, really, because I chose the new categories, so I've spent a little time thinking about them. So you, if you want, you can go to an old category.
Oh, come on, Chris, have we met? You know how much I enjoy getting thrown into the deep end. Let's give it a whirl.
You give that, give the spinny wheel a spin.
Can you read that?
I can. It's in my handwriting, so I better be able to since you're not going to be able to read it. But it's landed on, of course, even though it has new, start a new sentence before you finish the old one. Okay, that's, I haven't changed that way. It's landed on lens. And the next sentence I want to say is, the spinny wheel, even though it has new categories, has not lost its mojo, because lens is
the topic of the day.
Is in fact, you know, what we've just talked about, changing the lens of how we look at. So that metaphor of vision and lens is so important. A lot of times in conversations, if you take a step back from how the conversation is happening and try to reflect on the frame, think of a picture frame, like certain things are in the frame and certain things are out of the frame. Or if you're thinking about a camera, A camera has a lens. Lenses bring some things into focus, but if you bring that into focus, then something is out of focus. So in both ways, thinking of frames, picture frames, or a camera lens, the idea of vision is crucial to our project. And so we, I'll just repeat maybe in different words what we said at the beginning, and I'll use focus as the kind of lens of a camera. If you focus on politics and economics, there are things then that you do not see. And our culture has become, we're so used to using the lenses of political and economic that often, more than often, what happens is then you lose focus on moral kinds of questions. That's my riff on lens.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that. I there's an analogy that I use often about, you know, if we were to walk into a room with no windows and just one door, and the only thing in that room were three potted plants in three of the corners of the room, and in the fourth corner of the room, a king cobra. Chances are really good when you came out of the room, if you were asked questions about the potted plants, you would not have an answer. You would not have seen them. The king cobra would have taken all of your attention. And perhaps in that scenario, that's, you know, appropriate. However, when it happens like that consistently and throughout in culture, which has been happening, right? The king cobras are, you know, the loud, the dramatic, the catastrophic, the bullies, the oppression, the injustice. When that stuff begins to sort of dominate your lens, as Chris said, we lose sight of the potted plants, of the beautiful things that are happening around us. And when we lose sight of the beautiful things around us, we lose sight of the beauty that's possible for ourselves and how we might move, you know, away from the king cobra and towards that which is beautiful and which sustains human life. So, you know, it requires some training. I know from my days back on the fire department, one has to really learn to constantly step back and take a big view because, of course, you pull up on scene and there's a car accident. Your focus goes right to the automobile, goes right to the patients trapped in the automobile, particularly if it's a bad accident, and you go running in to help because that's what you've been trained to do, failing to see the power lines that are down on the car. And then you're no help to anyone. So, again, we're the purpose of the show, the purpose of the S1 project is to try to expand, to maybe make the lens flexible so that one sees both the cobra and the beauty that one, that field and view, as they say in the language of photography, are, you know, are forever moving back and forth.
Okay, this is not our show today, but I want to respond to this because I think that is such a powerful image, this room with potted plants in three corners and the cobra in the fourth. And in your telling of the story, someone comes into the room and sees the cobra and cannot see the potted plants. What if the person walks into the room and in psychological defense against having to be aware of threat and danger, the person is in denial about the cobra and can only see the potted plants. And this is why I'm saying
equally
this.
Challenging.
Yeah. Well, to me, that's that can be, I'm not saying it's the only, but I think that is a dynamic really at work in our shared common life where we don't want to see the dangers and we're in denial about the dangers and we just want to pretend that everything's good.
Oh man, this is topic for another show because I could riff on that. I think probably, you know, that situation in the room with the plants and the cobras, one should best enter as a Buddhist, you know, sort of aware of all things and mindful of all things and not reacting overly to any at the expense of the other, but to hold all things as they are. Mm-hmm. God, I want to be a Buddhist in my next life. So, Chris, the topic of the show today.
Oh, wait.
You need a little spoon to hit that with.
Apparently. Okay, so that is our homemade sound effect that signals that we're moving beyond the spinny wheel to our topic for the day. But we've already done that, but I had to do the sound effect, Shane. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
Carry on.
Topic for the day. So, and actually the topic for the day is a grounding topic for the year. And that is, as Chris wrote recently in an article, our essential question for this program year gets both its juice, its energy, from a question about the moral foundations of democracy. Chris recently wrote a piece. I was going to say it was posted on our webpage, but we don't have a webpage.
No, it went out in our newsletter, and we'll tell you how to sign up for our newsletter at the end of the show. But carry on.
Okay. And you were going to share that with us here today,
yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, it's very short. I'm going to read it, and Shana and I will have a conversation about it. So our essential question, as Shana says, is really about a valid critique of liberalism, and we need to understand liberalism as the liberal ordering of society, not a political party. And that critique of liberalism is alive and being debated in public conversation. So it's relevant in that way. The valid critique is that society framed around the freedom for people to pursue their own ends, their own goals, their own aims, as long as those people don't infringe on other people pursuing their own ends, leaves unasked the question, how ought we to live? So that's the critique of liberalism. Classical political liberalism is rightly suspicious of power that wants to coerce people to have or to hold a particular vision of the good, a good that everyone must subscribe to. Religious liberty, as conceived in the First Amendment's Free Exercise and Establishment Clauses, for example, is classically liberal in exactly this way. Religious liberty protects individuals from a coercive power to believe or to worship or act in particular ways. Classical political conservatism observes that no society can endure that isn't ordered to some vision, of the good, that doesn't give some account of what makes for human flourishing that goes deeper than, I'll do my thing and you do yours. So the critique of the liberal order connects to the practice of democracy. There is a moral foundation for democratic practices, but we've forgotten the words to articulate that moral foundation. We've forgotten how to say that a liberal ordering of society is good. We've forgotten the language to express the goodness of ordering society in that way. So if we don't remember why it's good and we have forgotten the language for articulating its goodness, there should be no surprise when people, as they have begun to do, begin to wonder if there might be a different way. Polls ought to always be taken with at least a grain of salt, but a poll recently suggested that as many as 20% of young people in America believe that dictatorship could be good in certain situations. I love this. I love this statement. It's not mine. I wrote it, but it's not mine. I heard it this summer at a conference. The moral norms necessary for the practice of democracy are not ensured by the practice of democracy. Let me say it again. The moral norms necessary for the practice of democracy are not ensured by the practice of democracy. So, the work of our podcast and now our larger project has always been to dig into, to recover, and lift up the moral and humanistic theological wisdoms without which our shared common life is lost. Do you agree? There's debatable stuff in there of what I wrote. How does it land with you?
Well, I'm one of the people who thought that would be a great trajectory for us this year. So, yeah, no, I don't actually honestly disagree with anything you said. In fact, when I first read it, I was like, oh, bam, right on the mark. And I particularly loved that, you know, you called all of us to that, you know, to be both liberal and conservative, to cherish freedoms while not being afraid to assert some moral grounding, or to, you know, to reclaim the language of what is good, what is right. You know, we were doing a show, I think it was last year, on abortion, and I was sort of retracing the history of the liberal church and how it got really quiet, and how it became increasingly ineffective, honestly, in the wake of the argument around abortion, because the so-called religious right came out so stridently, and at times violently, in language and deed, and the more liberal Christians didn't want to be identified with that, so they started to get really quiet. In reading a recent article by David Brooks in The Atlantic, he talks about how by the 1960s, the whole school of moral and ethical formation that had existed had been woven in the fabric of America. It was just intrinsic to the fabric itself of America. Secular organizations, schools, churches, and home, we were all very much focused on raising good people. And we might have had our differences about what constitutes a good person, but there were at least at the core some basic commonalities about social skills, for example, the ability to listen, right, without screaming or taking someone's head off. And then, you know, so we went into this period of moral decline, followed by postmodernity, in which relativism sort of became the golden calf of the day. And that has been so prized. Well, you just do your thing, or that is your truth. Well, there has to be some universal truths that we can all agree on. Life is sacred. If we destroy the planet, we're screwed. There is, you know, no other place to go. There are certain moral, I don't know how to, in the language of philosophy, do you refer to them as sort of like ultimates?
Some philosophers use the language of maxim, like moral maxims.
Moral maxims. That was the one I was groping for. So, you know, that certain moral maxims that probably the vast majority of us can agree to. And I don't think you're ever going to be in a situation where everyone agrees. And we look to those who disagree to keep us honest and on track in what it is we are pursuing. But that ultimately, at the end of the day, the question we have to be pursuing together is, how shall we live? How shall we learn to get along with one another? And that is not a toxically individualistic endeavor.
And even to, there's so many things I want to respond to, but just that last thing, which now I've just totally forgot because I interrupted myself. Can you say what was the last thing you said again?
That it's not a toxically individualistic endeavor.
Yeah.
The pursuit of to address the question, which all of the world's great religions do, or ought to have historically done, is how shall we live together?
Right.
How shall we learn to get along?
And okay, so here I'm going to try to articulate this. First, there's a moral dimension to that to say, in other words, there's a moral argument to say that pursuing that question together is a good. That is good because some people in our culture, in our shared common life today, are at the point where they're rejecting the goodness, from my perspective, the goodness of pursuing that together and want to impose a vision of the good on others. So
So, and others have just walked away from the table altogether. They're no longer interested, don't think it's possible. I'm going to take care of me, you take care of you, and stay out of my face. Now, we live in New Hampshire, the live free or die state, so that libertarian sort of thought tends to dominate a lot of the culture here.
Right.
But I do think you see a lot of that across the country.
So another way to phrase it is, I talked to Joseph Minnick, and he that show is a couple of weeks ago. He talked about the project of persuasion, and that in a for a democracy to work, people have to be committed to the project of persuading each other, and so that. There's a moral foundation to be, or a moral account to be given of why the project of persuasion is a good thing versus giving up on the project of persuasion and moving to coercion. But some people, I think this is a dynamic at work in our culture, feel like they have such a clear vision of what is good that they're justified in imposing that, in giving up on the project of persuasion and going for assertion, domination.
Yeah, well, and you know, look, in fairness, we don't teach those skills anymore. I mean, there, you know, once upon a time, we, you know, oratory skills were taught in school.
Yeah.
People learned how to form and think a good argument. Now, unless you're in law school, I don't know where you learn that.
Yeah.
So, you know, debate, clubs, et cetera, you know, that was kind of a big deal. And, you know, going way back and, you know, talking about really like late 1700s through the 1800s, you can find these, records of discourses that were held between two opposing, let's say, you know, a lot of times clergy, but just as often politicians who were, you know, outlining their argument from soup to nuts and putting it all down. But of course, people could sit through more than, you know, 4 minutes without the need for a commercial break, right? You know, so the ability to listen for long periods of time, and we talk about this in the church all the time, is one of the reasons the church is dying is that, you know, the art of coming in and sitting to listen to someone speak for 12 to 15 minutes at a shot, is in and of, and those are the liberal congregations, because the more conservative congregations, you're talking about a half an hour, 45 minutes or longer of a sermon. And people's ability to sit and actually stay focused on something for that long has been lost, or is not, you know, has been maybe not lost, that may be too harsh a word, but it is certainly in need of some rehabilitation.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I love articles in The Atlantic, because they, you know, they go, they're long articles. They're not, you know, it's not like a 4 minute read.
Right. So the liberal project, again, understood as a way of ordering our common life, not to understand it as a political party. So the project of liberal society, liberal polity, is committed to this idea of commitment to
freedom.
The project of persuasion. Certainly
project
freedom,
of persuasion,
freedom of conscience, because that's a piece of
it. Yep, and individual freedom.
And
conservatism, not as a political party, but as a philosophical ideology, says, yeah, freedom is fine up to a point, but you got to have something to anchor it to, or it just,
right. I mean, that's the
drifts off into the realm of relativity, where everything is everything, which means nothing is anything at all.
Exactly. Well said. And that is the classical tension. I mean, this is perennial in political philosophy, the tension between freedom and order. They're not opposites. Again, this is beyond the binary. This is, you know, a grown-up mature perspective on this is that those are held in tension, and wisdom is being able to figure out when we need more freedom and maybe a little less order, or when there needs to be maybe a little more order and a little, I hesitate to say less freedom because, you know, freedom sounds like a good all the time, but a little less, a little less individualism, a little mm-hmm. less liberty, mm-hmm. You know, from the libertarian perspective, to put it that way.
And that's the juice and energy behind the What in God's Name. And yeah. we invite you all to, you know, to stick with us, to follow us, to look for opportunities to join the conversation.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. Become one of the growing number of people supporting these kinds of conversations, not just Shana and me on a podcast, but in the other places that we're going to be connecting to, the conversations that we are fostering. Join us, support us, be a generous donor on Patreon, patreon.com, and then you can look for What in God's Name in the search bar. If you do want to get on to our email list, our website is currently in process of revision. We are revising our website to be better able to represent the S1 project. And what? Anyway, I don't need to explain, like, why we're redoing our website.
Our website is currently under construction. We hope to have it back up and running soon.
Yeah, thank you. So if you want to get onto our email list, send me an email. And you can do that at whatingods@ribeye-media.com. Whatingods, one word, at ribeye, R-I-B-E-Y-E, dash media.com. Gosh, Shana, it's so good to see you again and to have this conversation. And I look forward to the ways that we can engage others. We've continually sought to do that. And so we're going to continually seek to do it. Great to be with you.
Always great to be with you, Chris.